The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Another extraordinary day in the Champions League. Manchester City out. Lyon beating them by 3-1. Frank Leboeuf, Stevie Nicol and Craig Burley with us. A lot to get through, boys. Craig, first off, how did this happen?
Well, it's quite simple, really. I mean, Guardiola changed his team around because he's having panic stations about his defensive unit. So he goes with the back three. That takes an awful lot away from their own game, and that was evident in the first half. And I said it yesterday, but we've all talked about it. Captain Calamity at the back. We said, why didn't Real Madrid utilise the ball over the top when City deservedly beat them? Well, guess what? Lyon with the two up front, ball in the channels, good bending run, horrible back line, and they get in. And then when City go back to the back four when they're chasing the game, Dan, but as open as they ever were. So, in some sense, yes, it's a prize because clearly City are the better side. But in some sense, and this might sound strange, no, it's not, because they continue to make the same mistakes at the back. And Lyon are a good side, not a great side, but they've got a goal threat. And that was the difference.
Stevie, just take me into the mindset of Pep Guardiola. No David Silva, Bernardo Silva, Phil Foden on the bench as well, as was Riyad Mahrez. It seemed to be quite a defensive setup at a team, surely, that is inferior in Lyon, and they should go and attack and beat.
That's what I would think. But clearly, Pep was thinking about his back line. And I don't understand... excuse me. I don't understand how you go to three, which is going to affect you more going forward because you always go 4-3-3, to try and cover a hole that is never going to be covered because the players you have, whether it's three or four, aren't good enough. So basically what you're doing is you're affecting your own team going forward. And as Craig said, that was absolutely clear until Mahrez came on and they went 4-3-3. And then they absolutely took the game to Lyon in a big way. So 100%, he got this way wrong. He certainly overthunk it too much, in my opinion, and ended up hamstringing his own team. And the first goal, you know, Craig said it enough times that it's the same old, same old. Well, you know what? If I've got a schoolboy team and nobody's closing the ball down and they're trying to hold the line, I would go crazy. These are seasoned professionals, and to make a mistake like this in such a big game again is absolutely criminal. And I'll say it again. It goes down to Pep Guardiola not teaching or talking or showing them how to defend properly when it matters most.
This isn't the first time we've seen him tinker in big matches, Frank. Stevie used the phrase overthinking it. It seemed that he did it again because the first half was a write-off. It was a waste of 45 minutes if you're City.
Exactly. I don't know what happened in his head and why, how he thought about the game. But you have to go to the certainty of your team and the way you play. And he went against that, going too defensive, where we all know that that's the biggest weakness of that team. And, well, of course, when I saw the lineup, I said there is a chance for Lyon. I don't see the two Silva, I don't see Mahrez, and there is a possibility for Lyon to do something, and it's what happened. I mean, they play at three at the back, and Walker had some problem on the left side with Maxwell Cornet. We had a fantastic game. We scored, I don't know, 4 goals in 3 games against Manchester City. I think they should sign him at some point. But, I mean, that guy had a perfect game because Guardiola allowed him to go forward and to have some free spaces. I mean, that's insane. Well, you have to give credit to the Lyon team because they had a fantastic game and they did very well. But Manchester City, and Guardiola in particular, did everything to lose that game.
And this is the first time, Craig, since he's joined City, that once again they trip up in the knockout stages.
Yeah, and it was the same. I mean, remind me last year. I can't remember last year's, but it was Liverpool the year before, was it not?
It was Spurs. It was the late goal, remember?
Yeah.
Everything turned around then.
Yeah. And the year before, it was Anfield away, obviously over the two legs where they capitulated, making Liverpool overran them. They made mistakes. Look, I don't know if he has anybody at City drilling a back four or a back line. If he has, they're not doing a very good job. And if he hasn't, he needs to swallow his pride, I think, and get somebody in that can drill a back line when you're in possession. Because clearly we know he's one of the best at setting up teams to go and play football with the movement, with the interplay and all that. But he hasn't solved the problem when they lose the ball. And as Stevie said, he clearly hasn't. Well, maybe he's tried to coach it. Maybe he's tried to fix it. Maybe he's tried to tell them. But it hasn't worked. He had the same problem at Bayern, not domestically, but in the Champions League. If you remember, he went to Barcelona, the Camp Nou, and tried to tinker with things and got obliterated. And here we have against a team where, yes, they're a threat. But really, if you do the basics, and that is when your team's in possession, even if you give the ball away, if you're at least goal side, without trying to play offside all the time or hold a high line, you're at least going to give yourself a chance to go and make a tackle. And I think unless he does something about this area, they're not going to win the Champions League when he's there.
Is he overrated, Stevie?
that's a little harsh. Have you seen his CV? Have you seen how many trophies he's won? He actually has won the Champions League before as well. So, listen, you can't say he's overrated. Like every coach, every single coach, everybody's got a flaw. We're not all perfect. We don't all know everything. And so when you're the coach, you have to surround you with people who know something about a certain position or a certain area of the field that you don't know. And if you don't do that, then you're going to have a problem. And his selection of playing Fernandinho as a wide of a back three is absolute insanity. You know, generally the wide centre-backs in a three, at the very least, have to have pace and be physical because you have to go out in wide areas. And Fernandinho possibly is the slowest man on the field, not just on City's team, but on Leon's team as well. And so you're asking for trouble. So I would suggest that he doesn't have anybody on his staff because clearly he doesn't know it. And there's nothing wrong with that. But you need to have somebody on your staff who does know what they're doing when it comes to certain situations, particularly defensively, so that they can then help you and ultimately help the team.
Do you want to say it, Dan, or shall I?
Go on.
That's why Liverpool have got a throw-in coach, Stevie.
Frank, a lot of people are obviously on social media relishing this, seeing Manchester City fail Pep Guardiola. They point to the fact Pep can only win the Champions League with Messi, Xavi and Iniesta.
Well, that's a fact, because he did when he won with Barcelona, and since he left, he didn't win anything with Bayern and Manchester City. But I will go with what Stevie said. I mean, you cannot say that he's overrated, because he has proven many, many times his quality. But, you know, football is made, and success in football is made by resolving details. And he didn't today. I think he went through the wrong path, where you have to go to your beliefs, where you are good at, when you know that you're going to be certain that your players going to go through, and he went the other way around, where other clubs like Leipzig, like Bayern Munich, like Lyon tonight, they went to where they're good at, where they know they can have beliefs on what they're going to do. He went to the question marks, and he lost today. So it's not because he's a bad coach. I think it's because he thinks too much, because he makes bad choices, but because also, again, and we talk every night about every game we see, he doesn't have a defense, and that's his biggest mistake. Like Barcelona, like Paris Saint-Germain a little bit, like Madrid without Ramos, like Juventus, I don't know, like so many teams, they didn't think about having good center halves. And we have to, they have to think about that in the future if they want to win. Liverpool won last year because they have Van Dijk. Madrid won because they have Ramos. I mean, we can see that Bayern Munich, they're strong. Even if they have Boateng, they have Alaba, they have also a fantastic goalkeeper. We have to think differently about football. It's not only about attacking. It's also how to defend properly.
Let's talk about, though, that second goal for Lyon. De Bruyne, of course, getting the equaliser for City. You thought they were then going to kick on. But then Lyon score. There was a question mark over an offside. It wasn't. However, was there a foul in the build-up to the goal, Stevie?
Was there a foul? I mean, seriously. There are some things that happen and you see that you think, this is the only time I'll ever see it. But you know what? We're not dealing with officials. And we're certainly not dealing with VAR, because, again, it is about as clear as the day is. You see Cancelo getting tripped up when he's trying to make his way back by Dembele, who actually scores. Now, I was the same as probably most people. I was looking at the offside. Was it offside? But then, when you have the opportunity to see it the second time and you can see the trip from Dembele, it's, oh, there's no way they're going to give this. Guess what? They gave it an absolute disgraceful decision, and it is just beyond me how that anybody connected with football, who thinks they know anything about football, never mind a guy who's actually probably sat so many exams and refereed so many games, can sit down and look at this and say it's no foul. It's an absolute disgrace.
Frank?
I totally agree. I mean, I'm very pleased that Lyon went through because they had the game, and I think they were the best team. They were the best team tonight. But we have two big details during the game. We don't become details, but become big facts. Where, in fact, there is a foul, definitely a foul, and the goal should have been disallowed. I think Dembele trips up the defender. And I want to thank Sterling. How can he miss that? So we try to analyze what Guardiola did wrong. But I think if the referees would have done their job, it would have been maybe a different story. Well, yes, Steve, I think the best team won tonight.
Come on. The third goal, the goalkeeper's in a shocker. The second goal should never have been allowed in a million years. And they took the one chance that they made with a run in behind. And then you've got City.
How many chances Manchester City had
and creating,
before De Bruyne scored?
But
before
no
De Bruyne
chances.
Scored, how many
Leon
chances?
Leon had one chance.
They had a chance with Marcel when he shot. But Lyon didn't have Manchester United.
Come on,
City
Fry. The best team did win. Come on, the best team.
Yes, I think the best team. The team who worked with his quality and accepted his weaknesses, did what they had to do. The other one was maybe 100 times better than Lyon. Didn't do the job.
I like that.
That's it.
I like that better. They did what they had to do. Didn't mean they were the better team. I like that better.
Let me split you two down the middle and just say the team that was super well drilled and knew their limitations won, and the super talented side that can't help shooting themselves in the foot lost. I mean, that's kind of the way I saw it. And, you know, we're thinking about this before the tie started over the last 48 hours, was what's going to be the big downfall for City? Are they going to make mistakes again? And the answer is a clear and abundant yes. And that's an issue. To go back to the social media and all the other stuff, these are just moronic idiots. You know, every manager, as Stevie said, and coach has a flaw at some point. And Guardiola's flaw, stepping out the Barcelona shoes, is he can't find the right balance in these knockout European juggernaut knockout competitions to find the correct balance between super efficient, entertaining, you know, creating chances, forward play, and defending. And as I'll repeat myself, until he does that, he's unlikely to win this competition. He can go out and buy another three or four David Silvas and Sergio Aguero. It's not going to make a difference. They've got an abundance of them, Dan. He's got to fix the problems at the other end. Frank?
Craig, I have a question. We can analyse everything and criticise Guardiola about everything, but because the question of Dan was about the second goal. If the second goal is disallowed, Do you really think that Man City will be out of the competition?
I'm not sure, because I still think that if you think back to before the second goal, Frank, or around that time, there was a couple, another two or three balls that Leon tried to play in diagonally, and Kyle Walker almost got caught out a couple of times. Only his pace got him back in. He was out of possession. So I do think that City would still have left themselves open, is the answer. Because they would have been gone for that winner had that goal been chopped off. And I think they would have left space in behind. So, you know, it's hard to say how much a difference it made, because this is a City side that are open willy-nilly anyway, whether they're chasing the game or whether they're defending.
I imagine everyone who watched this game had the same reaction when Sterling went to put that ball in the back of the net and somehow it goes over, because you just thought it was in. It was an absolute given that City were going to make it 2-1. How does he miss that, Stevie?
I think it's pretty clear. It's a lack of concentration. He's already got the ball in the back of the net. That can be the only thing that happens. You know, when you're concentrated and there's a ball coming to you and you're going to put it in another place, You're thinking about the height that it's going to bounce. Is it going to land on a soft piece of grass? Do you think it's going to jump up? Is it going to be firm? You know, these are all the things that are going through your head when you're concentrating. Now, when you stop concentrating and you think the ball's already in the back of the net, then you take your eye off it. Maybe it doesn't bounce the way you actually thought it was going to be maybe 2 seconds previously, and you end up putting it over the crossbar. It's 100%. He already thinks it's in the back of the net. He takes his eye off the ball and loses concentration. No question.
We talk about the defensive frailties for Manchester City, but in attack as well, they were lacking that spark. De Bruyne didn't have the best game, obviously, score, Craig. But you want more, don't you, from your big players on these big occasions?
Yeah, you do. But in some sense, I felt that was partly down to Leon. I thought they're... And the left wing back's name escapes me every time. Help me out again.
Cornet?
Frank.
Cornet
was annoying the hell out of me.
Ice cream Cornet.
Not because he's not Cornet, a good player, yeah, but because he was going to ground every 2 minutes. When there was ever a whiff of air went past him, he went down. But that being said, you had Marcel and the other players in that back line and the midfield guys as well. I thought they did for most part. You know, City did still create some chances, but for most part, I thought they did a really good job in there. Yeah, the referee helped them out with a couple of iffy decisions, but they were aggressive. They got around the ball. They won some second balls. And I thought they actually did a very good job of limiting the space for some of these guys to operate. And it worked out perfectly for them.
Frank, we have to have a word on
Leon. Can I add something, Dan?
Go on.
Sorry. Have you seen guys that in those four games, you have three games who has been won because of substitutes and good substitution? Adams for Leipzig, Choupo-Moting for Paris Saint-Germain, tonight Dembélé for Lyon. Well, we cannot Coutinho for fun, but that's very important. And that's, in modern football, what you will have to think about, especially if you keep those five substitutions. That would be a clear difference if you know what to do in those kind of situations.
Oh, that's what I meant to ask as well. I forgot about... he only made two subs, didn't he, Craig? Pep?
Yeah, was it David Silva and Mahrez?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mahrez. It's... you know, and you looked at the others in the beginning, you saw Phil Foden, the job he did against Real Madrid for a youngster was amazing. So you had Phil Foden as well, and you had others on the bench that were game changers. He didn't utilise it, and I think he was a little just befuddled at the end. He couldn't believe what he was seeing. He knows his side make mistakes, but here we have Ederson, who generally has been one of the most steadfast goalkeepers in European football over the last couple of years, just, you know, brushing out an easy shot to save. And, you know, I don't know why he didn't... I haven't got the answers, Dan. I don't know why he didn't utilise the rest of his substitutes.
Frank, we've obviously talked a lot about Manchester City. We've got to give some time to Leon. How big an achievement is this for them?
Well, it's huge. I can tell you, well... Yeah, they're going to face Bayern Munich. And if I gave 20% of chances yesterday on our show for Lyon before that game, I don't know if I can give even a percentage to Lyon to beat Bayern Munich, who is clearly the favorite. But it's huge. It's a huge step. I mean, it's maybe the second time they reach the semi-final. And they do well. They work with their beliefs, as I said, and all the fans must be delighted. I mean, Garcia was named after leaving Lyon, Marseille, and was booed by the fans, and nothing worked. We said that they're not very much a squad or team. They don't work together. Well, against Juventus for the two legs and tonight against one of the biggest team in Europe, they showed that they have at the level, not at the same level, but they can be for one game at the level of the biggest teams, and they should be very much proud of that, and now recover. Mm-hmm. and be ready for a big games for the semi-final.
Yeah, that big game is on Wednesday against Bayern Munich, as the semi-final's now set. 24 hours before that, of course, it's Leipzig against PSG.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
We showed you some headlines on yesterday's show, didn't we? More today, the front page of Bild saying win of the century. Bayern destroyed Barca with 8 goals. Very much contrary to that. Mundo Deportivo in Catalunya saying the end of an embarrassing cycle. Stevie's still with us. Gab Marcotti joins the show as well. Gentlemen, I just want to talk a little bit more about what we saw play out in Portugal 24 hours ago. Steve, I'm just starting with you. And what was your big takeaway from a Barcelona point of view?
It's over. It's time to restart. It's time to rebuild. Back to basics. I don't have any thoughts of grandeur because right now they have to get a solid base and start again, pretty much.
Here's the problem with that, Gab. As much as everybody's been talking about an overall after this game, about everyone's getting older, you need to bring in some fresh legs, Barca don't really have the resources to do that, do they?
No, I mean, when you think that they spent, close to $400 million on Antoine Griezmann, Ousmane Dembele, and Philippe Coutinho, neither of the three started that game. Different reasons. Obviously, Coutinho was playing for the other team or came on and scored 2 goals. I think it speaks to a deeper failure. And I think when Gerard Piqué, after the game, he talked about, look, it's not just the players, it's not just the manager. It runs deeper. It's a structural issue that we have here. That's what he was talking about. This team is tapped out financially, tapped out in terms of wages. There's all sorts of stuff going on, not even behind the scenes, out in the open because of the way Barcelona is. All sorts of issues with Bartomeu and the people around him. And that affects them on the pitch.
They're in free fall now, pretty much, yeah, Gab. They're trying to have a parachute, but there is no parachute for Barca anymore because they've used too many of them.
There's no immediate parachute. And I think this will present an interesting conundrum with Lionel Messi. Because I think with any sort of older superstar, and I think the same thing applies to some of the challenges facing Cristiano Ronaldo at Juventus, you can't really rebuild when you have a GOAT candidate there who you're paying a ton of money to. So the idea is, you get Messi to stick around while you bring in a bunch of kids, promote from the cantera, make it all about Puig and Fatih and say, well, we're going to be good in a couple of years' time once we get through this rocky period? Or, do you continue to, so to speak, throw good money down the money hole and try to bring in veterans that you think are going to help you now? I think that's the tricky conundrum that they need to resolve here.
Let's focus that on Messi then, shall we, Gab? Could he leave?
I mean, presumably the threat is always there, right? There's a reason why, he only signs 1-year contracts because he knows that the danger is always there. I don't there's no indication that he has any desire to leave. And I think in some ways, you know, you even saw that from Bartomeu saying, well, I want to, you know, sort out Ter Stegen's contract first because, you know, Messi's not going to be an issue. What I would imagine is Messi's going to look and say, what club is this direction going in? Can I influence the direction in which this club goes? Because, you know, there's suggestions that we could have early elections, perhaps in January or February, although some people are going to want elections even earlier. There's a decision to be made on the new manager. You imagine Messi's going to be consulted. I think, you know, the question is Messi's going to be like, I'm a big asset to this club. I love this club. I want to make my voice heard because, you know what, all this time that I was sitting there letting others make decisions, you know, we ended up in the mess that we're in right now. So I think, the next couple months are going to be absolutely pivotal for Lionel Messi.
Gab, can I ask you a question? You know, because, you know, this slide's been going for, what, 3 years maybe, since Neymar left? And every time there's a crisis or something goes wrong, it always ends up with the last line is usually, and of course Lionel Messi will come into the, you know, the decision making. Why are you still going to have Lionel Messi in the decision making after 3 years when you think he's been sticking his nose in and all these bad decisions have been made? I mean, surely now's the time to get Messi, we want you to play. We want you to play football. We want you to sort out the team. We'll do all the other stuff. We don't need you involved. Because if he's got too much say, then no wonder the club's going the wrong way, making all these changes. What, three different football directors in 5 years or something? I mean, ridiculous. So the buck stops with the president. He's the one that's made all the bad choices. And if he's actually decided to get Messi involved in the decision-making, then that's another bad choice on top of it.
Well, so, I mean, first of all, I don't think, you know, about the slide that we talk about, they did win La Liga twice in the last 3 years, you know, as bad as this season has turned out to be. Secondly, you know, I don't think it was Messi who decided to sign Griezmann and Dembele and Coutinho. So, but I think it was more within the context that whoever Messi decides to back, if Messi decides to back a different candidate at the next election, if Messi, you know, we saw Messi, obviously, we saw the letter he wrote to Eric Abidal, the director of football, earlier this year. When Messi takes these actions, they do have massive repercussions on the club. So that is the power he wields. Now, you can look at it and say, well, okay, that's fine. You're a great footballer, but, you know, you're not necessarily a director of football or a club president type, not yet anyway. So please get back in your box. But equally, you know, Messi moves voters. Barcelona have elections. It's fans who answer. And if you're asked most fans right now, you know, who do you trust more with Barcelona's future? Is it Lionel Messi or is it Bartomeu? They're going to say it's Lionel Messi.
Right. Two things here. I want to start. OK, let's do Messi. I'll just do Messi a moment. Stevie, if you're Messi, 33, this is a big rebuild, isn't it? Do you leave to try and get that
Absolutely.
Champions League elsewhere?
Yeah. Wow, this really is down to what kind of person Messi is. You know, he's got two trains of thought, basically, for me. One is, this club's given me everything. I know I've given everything I have to them. For me to leave would just be wrong. Or, I've only got a couple of years left at the very top. Maybe three max. I can't spend the rest of my career bringing up a bunch of kids or going through, you know, mediocrity. Now, I guess mediocrity for them would be qualifying for the Champions League, but, I mean, it's really mediocrity we're talking about because they need to make, in my opinion, need to make at least 6 or 7 changes. So I don't see how they're going to win the Liga with 6 or 7 changes, certainly over the next couple of years. So that's what it boils down to. He's either absolutely 100% loyal, thinks he owes his career to what Barcelona did for him, or else it's look after yourself and I need to go.
Right. Now to presidential elections that you've mentioned quite a bit there, Gab. Why does that make any real difference to Barcelona unless the new president's got a time machine and can bring back Xavi and Iniesta at their best and Barcelona their pomp back in 2010? Because surely you've still got the same restrictions around you.
The restrictions will still be there, but the new president will, of course, decide who the new manager is and who the new director of football is. I think taking this for granted that on Monday, you know, Eric Abidal and probably the chief executive, Oscar Grau, as well, that these guys are going to depart the club. Setien, we know, will almost certainly go as well. So I think that's something that that is going to matter to Messi, because it's going to determine the sort of people he's going to work with every day and who his boss is. Obviously, there's the restrictions are still going to be there. Just as a reminder, Barcelona have the highest wage bill in the world. Wow. They're stuck with a lot of older players. They've got very limited room to maneuver, which is why, for example, we saw things like the Artur for Pjanic swap deal. They're going to need somebody coming in who can be creative like that, who can shift players, and who can make it work. So I think it's going to be critical that whoever comes in is somebody who has the confidence of Messi, and also of some of the older players if they're still around.
But isn't that dangerous in itself, Gab? Like, if you want the confidence of Busquets and Piqué, who I assume are the veterans that we're talking about, they're not up to the task anymore, so why would you listen to them?
Well, I think you listen to Gerard Piqué because he's a football man, and I think he's a future president of Barcelona. He may not be as great as he was on the pitch, but you still listen to him because he's somebody who cares about the club and who has the club's best interests at heart. They need people who are very, very straight about the club's current situation, need to be very, very straight about, you know, the different scandals that have enveloped the clubs in recent years. They need to be very straight about some of these decisions, some of these signings that were made. And look, they need to tell the fans, this is a tough period, massive mistakes were made, but we have new leadership and we're going forward along this way. And I'll tell you what, if they bring in, you know, Xavi, it's not clear whether he wants to come in with Bartomeu or whatever, but if you bring in a Xavi, you buy yourself time. You bring in somebody who, you know, can say, all right, this is a project and it's going to be 2-3 years. If you go for a more tried and tested coach, you're going to have less time to do that.
You mentioned tried and tested coach. Sid Lowe writing about the fact that Pochettino is the number one target for Barcelona, Gab. How likely is it that we could see him come in to take over from Setien?
Well, it's funny, Pochettino, obviously a former Espanyol coach and strong ties to the club. In some ways, you don't think it matters, although I think, and I could be wrong here, I think he said in the past that, oh, I could never go to Barcelona, whether it was a big joke or not. I don't know. I think, obviously, Pochettino would be, I think, a tremendous upgrade over not just over Setien, but over Valverde as well. I think we've seen Thierry Henry linked too, which I think would be a bit of a curious choice, Ronald Koeman as well. But I think the thing with Pochettino is, you know, Pochettino has a reputation as a building coach, as a charismatic coach, and also as a players coach. So those are all three things that you would need to have in place. But it really doesn't matter who the coach is unless you sort out what's happened above this absolute mess of contracts and spending and financial commitments that were made above the coach's head. Because otherwise, you know, you're sending him in with both hands tied behind his back.
We saw actually Pochettino last month address the quotes that he made when he was in charge of Espanyol, where he said that he would never coach at Barcelona, saying, well, that was just something I said in the time. Obviously, now, with hindsight, maybe it wasn't the right thing to say. Obviously, Stevie, he doesn't want to slam that door to one of the biggest clubs in the world, but it's a big club in a mess. Can Pochettino sort out that mess? Mm. As Gab said, is his hands completely tied about what's going on above him?
Well, you know, Spurs, I wouldn't say Spurs were in a complete mess when he got there, but they were kind of drifting. And he got them on a path and with some clever buys as well. Got them up challenging for league titles and Champions League. I would suggest, though, that, you know, we were talking about Piqué and Busquets. Yeah, maybe the time's up on the field, but I think if I'm the manager coming in, whether it's Pochettino or anybody else, I think it's important that you keep these guys around because they know what the real culture of Barcelona is. And when Barcelona as a team needs so many changes, you need people there that can very quickly get probably younger players and certainly any player up to speed with what's expected, how we handle ourselves. This is the Barcelona way. So, you know, you can't just throw everybody out that's done. And there are three or four that are done, in my opinion. But you can't discard them. You keep them around, whether it's as an assistant or whether you have them in the reserves and they're still in the building. I think whoever comes in has to be very smart the way they go about this.
And Dan, if I can just add, like, for all the doom and gloom and disaster, whoever comes in, and yeah, I agree there is a big rebuilding job and they are hamstrung and whatever else, but you're also going to be starting out with arguably the best goalkeeper in the world, or certainly one of the top two or three, arguably one of the best central midfielders, passing central midfielders in the world in Frankie de Jong, arguably the best teenage player in the world or close to it in Ansu Fati, and probably or arguably the best player in the world in Lionel Messi. So, you know, when you talk about sort of a starting point, that's not a bad starting point. You're not starting from absolute scratch. You just have to figure out the pieces that are going to fit in around them.
Boys, thank you very much. As always, extra time available over on our YouTube channel. Stevie, Frank and Craig answering your questions.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The action then continues on Sunday. It's the first of the Europa League semi-finals. Manchester United taking on Sevilla. It should be a cracker. Gav and Stevie with me to look ahead to this one. Gav, United slight favourites.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason they're only slight favourites has to do with what Sevilla displayed against Roma and against Wolves along the way, and also what we saw from United against Copenhagen, which, you know, it took them a while to get going. I mean, they created chances obviously before their late goal, but Sevilla's got a tremendous record in this competition, and obviously, you know, Julian Lopetegui is a guy who's got, you know, a lot of he's got a lot of options in how he lines up and how he approaches games.
Stevie?
I'm kind of conflicted with this because, you know, I would obviously suggest that Manchester United on paper are a better side than Sevilla, but, you know, Sevilla, as Gab said, in this competition, an absolutely incredible record, and they look as though they want to win this as much as anybody. And you kind of wonder, considering the lackluster performance of Man United against Copenhagen, you kind of wonder if this really is the top of Ollie's list, which I think it probably should be. So I'm finding it difficult to pick a winner here. I think it'll come down to attitude. If Ollie puts the attitude in the team he picks, and obviously if it's the first team, then that will tell you that he wants to win it, then they should be favourites. But if he goes about this the wrong way and puts little seeds in players' minds that, you know, we'd love to win it, but it's not the end-all, being end-all, then I think Sevilla will be the side that will win it because they have been great. You know, football-wise, they pass Wolves off the field for me in the last round. And if Man United are not at it, then Sevilla can definitely beat this United side.
Let's get some predictions then, Gab.
I'm going to lean United, and I'm going to say a 2-1 victory. I just think it would be absolutely appalling. I've heard this nonsense here about, oh, why doesn't United, why don't they put out the B team? It's better if they get knocked out because that way they have more time to prepare for the Premier League season and all this other garbage. I don't think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer thinks like that. I know Paul Pogba doesn't think that way. So I think they're in it to win it. And so I give them a slight edge. 2-1.
Narrow United win. Now for our anti-Manchester United correspondent to give us his prediction.
What are you talking about, anti-Manchester United correspondent? I just told you, if they fancy it, if they want to win it, then they're better than Sevilla. Let me just put it that way. Listen, the attitude they showed in the last game, I'm not quite sure they're desperate to win it. So,
what's your prediction?
I'll go with Sevilla, just to keep you happy, Dan.
What's your prediction, Sevilla?
Sevilla won, just to keep you pleased.
Of course, there it is.
One more than United.
YouTube comments are right. Right about you, Stevie, everything they say. Thank you very much, gents. We'll, of course, be looking ahead to a bat. We'll be reviewing that game on the next edition of the show. Be sure to join us. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
That's it then. Another quiet day, really, in the world of soccer, hasn't it been? Be sure to join us tomorrow. Be sure, though, also to stay tuned. Extra Time is next. Craig, Stevie and Frank answering your tweets. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Frankie, Stevie and Craigie. I'm never going to say that again. with us. Boys, we talked a lot about the game, obviously, on the show. One thing we didn't really touch on, because we recorded straight after, was Pep Guardiola coming out and saying that he thought his team were excellent for the opening 20 minutes. Do you agree with that, Frank?
I don't. Well, I guess we didn't see the same game. I didn't see something fantastic from Manchester City all the way, and especially the first 20 minutes. I think I didn't see anything from the first 20 minutes, except the Lyon team very well positioned, and that's it. But Manchester City didn't show something special, and I don't agree with that.
Craig, you can't believe that, can he?
Yeah, but I think we're twisting it.
What do you mean?
Well, I saw the clip, and he clearly said he played a back three to try and cover the holes that he knows is there. And I think when he said he thought they were excellent to start with, I thought he meant excellent defensively before they capitulated. So I think that's what he meant. He also said during that that they didn't offer as much going forward because of the change of shape of the team, and he said, I think he sort of covered that, and I think we're trying to twist this here because I thought it was quite clear what he said.
Did you sneeze, Stevie?
Could help her.
What do you think, Stevie? Are we twisting this?
Well, actually, I've got another take on this because as a coach, when you lose a goal after, let's say it was 20 minutes and 1 second, you're going to say, well, you know what, until we lost the goal, I thought we were great. So, what do you think the guy's going to say? As far as he's concerned, they started well, okay. I mean, so what? So they should. The way the game started did not surprise any of us whatsoever. Leon, we're going to sit tight, and Man City, we're going to have the ball, and that's it.
Okay, let's get to the tweets then. Is this high time football club should realise that possession football is a thing of the past and you cannot dominate the game by dominating the ball, Stevie?
Well, hold on a second. How does that... Listen, that would make sense. If you're that good with the ball, then it makes sense. I would throw in that, you know, it's kind of like trying to... It's like trying to put a team together of 11 Messis. It wouldn't work. You know, you need different types. And I don't think Pep gets that. I think right now, if he could, he would love to have somebody like Puyol who maybe wasn't the greatest with the ball or technically the best, but he could defend and he got everybody around him going. So, listen, if you can keep the ball from front and don't give it to the opposition, then you're never going to get hurt. But realistically, that's not what happens. And so that means you need people that can defend when you lose the ball. And Man City don't have any of those.
What's this nonsense? I lost what Stevie said there because my connection went on, caught the end of it. But what?
I'll tell you what I was saying, Craig. I was saying that I bet you if he could, he would love to have somebody like Puyol playing for him at the back. Instead of him bringing in people like Stones who can pass the ball, but we know they can't defend, go and get yourself somebody like Puyol.
So I don't get these tweets. I really don't get it because the Champions League is difficult to win. We know that. It's elite competition. You make mistakes, you go out. You know, you got to have a possession with a purpose, and that's what generally Man City have always had, and Liverpool, and the Barcelonas, and Bayern Munich, if you watch them, just take Barcelona apart the other day. But let's just hold our horses here, because up until Arsenal knocked him out of the FA Cup semi-final, again, balls over the top, defensive issues, they'd won 8 out of the last 9 domestic competitions, you know. So we've seen a team in Real Madrid desperate to win La Liga after dominating Europe. So winning your league is important. We've seen how important it is to Liverpool after 30 years to be back on top of the tree in England. So let's hold our horses on smashing Guardiola left, right and centre about his team and his possession because they didn't play particularly well on this occasion.
Stevie, would you still say Liverpool are the best team in the world given how Bayern Munich have been playing and demolishing teams effortlessly?
Well, Dan, if there was a game tomorrow between Liverpool and Bayern, I would back Bayern.
Right. So they're the best team in the world.
Mind you, Liverpool haven't played for 3 weeks. So there you go.
What do you think, Frank?
Hard to say. I want to see them playing against each other. I would put Bayern ahead of everybody else. I mean, since I saw them, you know, giving a lesson of football to my former team in the first half, in the first leg against Chelsea, I said to everybody that they were the favourites, and they are showing to the world that they, in any compartment, they are the best in the world. To the tweet that we had before about position of the ball and domination, I mean, they dominate the game by going forward, not keeping the ball just for the sake of it, just because you just want to make, I don't know, 500 or 600 passes. They get the ball, they dominate because they press high and because they want to score a goal, not to think about scoring maybe a goal at some point. That's the difference, and I like teams who play vertically. Liverpool showed the way, Bayern Munich is just showing that's the real way.
I think it's hard to judge things like this, Dan, because clearly some personnel have changed at Bayern, including the coach. But didn't Liverpool take them apart in the Champions League last year? Absolutely pulled them from pillar to post. And Bayern have improved, but then so did Liverpool improve, because they had 99 points. They won the league so early that they were on their, they had their slippers on and were on their holidays. So it's a difficult, you know, you can't judge Liverpool in the last 3 or 4 weeks of the season because the job was done. It was done and dusted. And so it really would be hard to, if both these sides were firing all cylinders, like Liverpool were, you know, midway through the season when they just cut themselves loose, it's just too difficult to say one's better than the other.
Stevie, have you ever missed a chance like the Sterling miss on such a big stage? And if you have, how did it affect you and your confidence as a football player?
Not as blatant as that. You know, I had a chance in the World Cup in 86, but I saw it late and it was coming across quickly. I didn't quite connect. And I was over it pretty much as soon as the game was done. So,
couple of beers.
I did, on the other hand, nearly have one of those moments against Newcastle. My second goal, I was about 12 inches from the line, and you actually asked me on the show, Dan, how Sterling missed his, and I said it was because the ball was already in the net and he lost concentration. And the reason I know that is because I did it, but I got away with it. And I don't think it even hit the back of the net. That's how lucky I was that it actually went in.
Craig, you ever had a miss like
Dan,
that?
No, never missed one that bad, to be quite frank. I mean, Stevie said it on the show. He saw the goalkeeper was beaten. The empty net was there, and he'd already scored it. Right? It's a simple. It's not a difficult technique. Right? He's only got to get good contact on it, and don't lean back. But it's interesting. I've just gone back to talking about Liverpool when they won the league and were in the slippers. There was a man turned up at the golf course last week and was going to play in his slippers.
I wonder how I would get involved in this.
Oh, that would have been fun.
Stevie, how did you forget to change your shoes?
Well, the truth is, I took my wife's car. And she said she would put my stuff in the back of the car the night before, and she did. She put my golf clubs and my trolley in, but she forgot to put the shoes in, and I didn't check. And so I turned up, I got out the car, got my clubs, shut the door, locked the door, took three paces and looked down and realised that I had my slippers on.
Beautiful.
So, fortunately, Dan, he comes walking down the car park and goes, no, well, he was getting the clubs out of the car, out of the trunk, and I heard them. All I heard from about 50 yards away was, oh, no! And I went, he's forgot his juice. It was worse. He says, I've only got my slippers. Now, bearing in mind, he's a size 11, so they're big old feet. But just at that, one of the lads came out of their condo, Russ. So I shouted, because obviously I know most of them, so I shouted to Russ, hey, Russ, what size feet are you? He said, a size 12. I said, perfect, go and get your shoes. So he brought up two pairs of his loveliest shoes, one a little bit more modern than the others, for Stevie to select.
Oh, lovely. Did you buy him a drink afterwards, Stevie, to say thank you?
Well, about as close, isn't it?
Not even.
Well, that's no, here's a classic, close. Dan. Here's a classic. So we finish the round and he says, yeah. He says, what does, sorry, Frank, he says, what does Rush use for golf balls? And I said, well, he's a bit of a higher handicapper. So he says, I said, he'll take anything. He'll just hit anything, Russ. He said, I'll give him a few golf balls from giving shoes. I said, good idea. So he goes in the car in his trunk again, and he gets this sleeve of golf balls out, and he goes, hey, they're Callaway Chrome Soft, aren't they? They're the good ones. I went, yeah. He went, no, he's not getting any golf balls.
Frank, so, have you had a big miss like that from Sterling?
Oh, we're still on this?
Yes. yes, once against Australia, we played the Confederation Cup in 2001. I was playing for France and there was a cross and I was like not even a yard from the net, and I had to put a header in the net, and it was quite simple. And as Stevie said, I thought it was already in, and I just missed the header and it went just outside the goal. And I say, and I couldn't sleep at night, overnight, because I say, how it's possible to miss that? How can you miss that? It's not possible. It's harder to put it away than in. Whatever.
You didn't sleep, it was the Confederations Cup. What the hell's that?
Yeah, because I was captain and I was red carded right straight after. So it was a horrible day.
Oh, lovely, Frank. You know?
But, Yeah, but we won the Confederation Cup. I played the semi-final and the final, and we won it.
Oh, well done. It was well done. That must be right.
The third
that
title.
That must be on your mantelpiece. Yeah. What is that?
No, you have three titles. You have three titles that you can win with the national team. It's the World Cup, the European Championship, and the Confederation Cup. And we won it.
Well, tell me what the Confederation Cup is again. Remind me.
It's the winner of the every continent in the world who are competing a year before another World Cup. So there was Brazil,
nonsense, friendly nonsense, France, and why nonsense?
Because you never played it and you criticize it.
No, we didn't. Scotland never played the Confederations Cup. Why are we bother playing Confederations Cup? I mean, get out of here.
Because only two teams, aren't
because
it?
You don't deserve to play it. It's why you are criticizing it.
Yeah.
Okay. Frank, next question. The so-called Farmers League has two teams in the Champions League semi-finals. Is it time to take the French League seriously?
That's a good question, by the way. That would be interesting to see how the French journalists, who are always hammering the Ligue 1, are going to think about it. But no, I think it's... I don't know. It's circumstances, and it makes that, that it's possible to see this season two clubs in the semifinal. But it doesn't reflect on anything the quality of the League One. We lose so many players every year because we have fantastic young players, but we lose them for foreign clubs, and it's impossible, almost impossible, to have the quality of the Liga or the Premier League or the Bundesliga. But we fight hard, and we don't have the same rights as well. The TV rights are very below what we can find in the Premier League. So money-wise, quality-wise, is different. So it's absolutely spectacular to see two clubs like that in the semi-final. But like last year when we saw Ajax, it's a miracle. But it doesn't reflect the quality of the championship.
Final question, Stevie. What has been the most surprising result in the Champions League so far for you?
Oh, come on. 8-2 Bayern Barcelona. Wow. We don't get any more surprising than that.
That's it, boys.
Should have been 12, by the way. I said, could it...
Go on, Steve.
Could have been 12-4. Oh, 8-2.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Right. Thank you very much for that. We'll be back tomorrow. Manchester United taking on Sevilla, bringing you all the talking points from that game. Until then, goodbye.